Good morning. It's good to see you this morning. We are so glad to have you here. We are in our second week of a new series, Cramming God into Congested Lives, in which we are exploring different habits that we can form that transform our hearts and transform our lives. We are looking at spiritual disciplines. Next week, you're going to want to join us as Clay and Vivian Hunter share a little bit of their story as we talk about what it means to journey together, to share life together, and how important that is as we're seeking to grow into the transformed life that God calls us to and creates us for. So you do not want to miss it next week. This morning, as we begin, I want to start with a video, and it is a wonderful video of a new song, and I think you're going to be blessed by the song, you're going to be blessed by the lyrics, in which the young lady who's singing the song is asking for God's reassurance of God's promises over her life and the claims that God makes on her life, and it is a desire to hear the voice of God amidst all the other noise around us. And so let me invite you to hear that song, and then it's going to serve as an illustration in just a moment. Let's watch. Is that was one of our students, one of our members, Annabelle Childers, who played that, sang that song, and she wrote that song. That's her original song. So I've asked Annabelle to come up because I want to ask her a couple of questions. And while she's making her way up, and Annabelle, I'm going to let you use this mic. That was also shot and edited by our very own Chris Delapace, the very talented. So Chris, I saw you sitting over here somewhere. Stand up. And this is Chris in his natural habitat. So we caught him out in the wild. What's that? Oh, my mic. Okay, you can hear me. Thank you. Okay, now you can hear me. So, Annabelle, in case you missed it, original song, wrote it, played it, sang it, beautiful. And Chris Delapace, thank you, and also beautiful. That is a good-looking ginger right there, I'm telling you. We love that guy. Very talented. If you ever need some video stuff for your work, talk with this guy. He's wonderful. So, Annabelle, speaking to this mic for us, how long have you been practicing piano?
Since I was 8.
Since you were 8. And how old are you now?
17.
17. So 9 years practicing piano. So that was beautiful. And I'm guessing you were always able to play that well. Is that right?
Definitely not.
Okay. No. So how long did you have to practice to get there? How often did you practice? What did you have to do to get there?
Okay, when I was younger, I practiced a lot more than I do right now, so I need to work on that. But I have lessons every week, and then I practice throughout the week to prepare for that lesson.
Okay. So were there any times when you thought about giving up, quitting, walking away?
Yes, a lot of times, because it gets hard with different things. Your friends are playing sports, and you want to do everything, but you can only do certain things. So my mom had to keep me through some of those times and make sure I didn't quit. So, yeah.
Okay, so your mom, and we just assumed JJ was really instrumental in that also. I'll just go ahead and throw that out there. Okay, so part of the motivation was your mom. Were there other things where over time it wasn't just the encouragement from her, but for yourself, what helped you keep going on?
Well, there were certain times when I started learning how to play chords, and I realized how much of what I was learning about like classical piano played into that, and I saw how I could write songs with what I had learned, and it really encouraged me to keep on going so that I could get better.
Okay, thank you. Let's show our appreciation to Annabelle. It was really wonderful. So it was a little more than a decade ago now that I was at a retreat, and a few of you were at the same retreat, in which the speaker of the retreat asked a question. It's a question I'm going to ask you right now. Have there ever been any times when you've witnessed someone who knows how to play an instrument? You go to a piano recital, or you see a song like that, or we've got a lot of really talented musicians in here. So they play guitar, they play some horned instrument, or whatever it is, and you watch, and you listen, and you think to yourself, I wish I could play the piano like that. Have any of you ever had that response before? Show of hands. Where you've seen it, you've heard it, and you think, I wish I could do that. Okay, so we were at this retreat, and the speaker asked that question, and a lot of us raised our hands just like you did, and after we raised our hands, then he looked at us, and he said, no, you don't. Like, who are you to tell me whether I want to play the piano or not? Yes, I wish I could play the piano. But then he continued. He said, no, you don't really wish that you could play the piano. Because if you did, you could practice. But you don't practice. So you can't play. And when he said that, it hit me. He's right. I don't want to play the piano. Our daughter has been taking lessons since she was 6. Which means we have a keyboard that I have to walk past every time I go to the kitchen. And I wish I could play the piano, but I never stop and sit at that keyboard. I've never taken any lessons. Besides hammering out Mary Had a Little Lamb every once in a while with one finger, I've never done what it takes to really play the piano. What I wish is that the heavens would open up and God would just pour this musical ability out on me, and without ever practicing, I would become a piano savant. I could just play anything I wanted, anytime I want. But that's not the way it works, is it? I want to play the piano, but I don't want to practice the piano, and I will never be able to play the piano unless I practice. So let me change the metaphor for just a moment. John Ortberg, in his book, The Life You've Always Wanted, says, imagine for a moment that the Olympics are coming up in just a couple of weeks. And out of nowhere, representatives from the U.S. Olympic Committee come to you, knock on your door, and they say, we've thought about this for a long time, and we know it's only a couple of weeks now, but we would really like you to wear the flag, to represent us, our great nation, in the marathon, in the Olympics. And you have a moment of panic because you lose your breath just going from the couch to the refrigerator and back again. So you know you may not have what it takes to do it, but they lay it on thick. You are the type of person that we want. You've got the character that we want. You represent what we want to represent our country. Would you do that? And you think, how can I say no to my country? I've got to answer the call. My country is called. I've got to answer the call. And so race day comes. And you stand at the start of the race, and maybe the adrenaline is pumping because there's crowds lining the streets and will eventually line the stadium. And maybe the adrenaline is pumping because of fear. And maybe the adrenaline is pumping because you know hundreds of millions of people around the world watch events like this, and the gun goes off, and you go out as strong as you can. You give it everything you've got, and what's going to happen in that race? You're going to fail miserably, aren't you? I'm going to fail miserably. I won't put that on you. You look like some really healthy people. I am going to fail miserably. I'm going to hit a wall at about 1.5, 2 miles. And I'll plow through that for another couple of miles, and we'll keep medical personnel on every side of me as I go. And eventually, I'm going to have to walk. And probably sooner than a lot of you, I'm going to have to walk, and I'm going to walk the rest of that race. Why? I tried when I get there. I try my best when I get there, but what's the problem? I didn't train. And we know there is a big difference between trying in the moment and training for that moment. Now, the Apostle Paul never taps into the piano playing, instrument playing image when he talks about this kind of thing, but he does actually lean into the athletic image several times. He writes a couple of letters to the church in Corinth, and Corinth was known, famously known, for the Isthmian Games, which were second only to the Olympics in popularity in the Greco-Roman world. And a lot of scholars think that Paul was around in Corinth in around AD 51 when the games were run. And perhaps he was plying his tent-making trade during the games for the athletes coming in and other people coming in to watch the games. And it's in the middle of this setting to this church who understands this image that he says this in 1 Corinthians 9:25, all athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away, but we do it for an eternal prize. So I run with purpose in every step. I'm not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what it should. Paul's pointing out what we all know regarding athletes. And that is that even raw ability only gets you so far. We've seen a lot of athletes crash and burn that have amazing raw ability, but it takes more than that to succeed. It takes training, not just trying. You have to prepare with purpose. A bit of shadow boxing would never have allowed Conor McGregor to hang 10 rounds with Floyd Mayweather. And an occasional walk around the block will never prepare you to run competitively in a marathon. Try as you might when you compete. If you do not train, you will fail. And of course, we know that Paul has bigger things on his mind than just the games. He's talking about competing for an eternal prize that doesn't fade, the prize of participating in God's life now and forever. That image we heard from 2 Peter last week. We want to wear the victor's crown, but wearing the victor's crown means living the victorious life, which means living more and more like Jesus, the ultimate victor. This is how Paul says it in 1 Timothy 4. Train yourselves to be godly. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value in all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. I love that image. The godly life is the most promising for this life and the life to come. There are some parts of living the godly life that may come naturally to you, and some parts that come naturally to others. Some people seem to just be a little more naturally patient, and some people seem to be just a little more naturally kind, and some people seem to be just a little more naturally generous. And it shouldn't surprise us that even in surprising people, we see glimpses of God, because everyone is created in the image of God. It reflects that God's design is still working in them. But at the same time, Scripture reminds us that every one of us, in our own way, dramatically falls short of that glory that God created us in. We all have room for growth. Sin gets in the way. Busyness gets in the way. There's all sorts of distractions that we wrestle with. We wrestle with knowing our priorities and maintaining our priorities. We've got, as Annabelle sang, all of those competing voices in our head. As I mentioned last week, growth is a gift of God. We cannot transform ourselves. Transformation is God's work. But we are called to be people who work with God instead of working against God. And this balance of what it means to live a life where we're working with God, but God is working in us and through us, is described beautifully in Philippians 2:12. Maybe you're familiar. Work hard to show the results of your salvation, obeying God with deep reverence and fear. For God is working in you, giving you the desire and the power to do what pleases Him. You hear how those two things go together? We're working hard to embrace the salvation that God has already wrapped us up in. We're working hard to show this saved life that God has claimed us for. It takes our effort, it takes our determination, it takes our grit, but it also requires grace that we could not enact on our own. And so God is working in us to change our desires, our heart, and to empower us, to give us the ability to live the transformed life. And it's that intersection that we're going to be looking at over the coming weeks and months, that we try to form habits that open ourselves to God's transformation, that we make intentional decisions, that we make commitments, that we choose the path of spiritual disciplines. Now, here's the thing. When you use a word like, or a phrase like spiritual disciplines, and when you use a word like discipline, that actually evokes some mixed response in a lot of people. And there's a variety of reasons like that. When I talk about spiritual disciplines, I'm talking about developing habits in prayer and different forms of prayer, in times in the Word, in meditation, in solitude, in silence, in generosity, in giving. On and on we'll go in this study. Those are the kinds of habits and actions and spiritual disciplines that I'm talking about. But for a lot of people, when they hear words like discipline, they get hung up a little bit. And part of it is just about the word. Because for some people, to even talk about discipline, they've got in their head notions of punishment. And even if you don't think in terms of punishment, some people hear discipline and they think drudgery, when this is called to be a delight, that we long for deep lives in God. But when we think about discipline, we think about something that is painful rather than joyful and purposeful. And some people are frankly repelled not by the word, but by the work. Because we love the idea of a deep life. But we're also a culture that loves things quick and easy with low commitment and high return. We want transformation and we want it now. We want an instant. I read just a couple of days ago that this afternoon during the Cowboys-Broncos game, Fox is going to do something new with a variety of their commercials. They will have the standard 30-second commercials, but they're also going to start adding 6-second commercials. And there's two reasons for that. One is more money. But the other reason they gave is that attention spans are so small that a 30-second commercial feels oppressive. Like we hit second number 7, we're like, oh my goodness, when is this going to end? We like things quick. We like things instant. We like things easy. But here's the thing when it comes to spiritual formation and transformation. It is a gift, but it also has to be a goal. It's something that we've got to put ourselves into, our time into, commitment into. It doesn't always come easy. It often doesn't come easy. Changing ourselves and allowing God to change us isn't easy, but that's what's involved. Marjorie Thompson, who's tapping into 1 Corinthians 3 in that image where Paul says, some plant, some water, but it's only God who brings the growth. This is what she writes. Spiritual disciplines are like garden tools. The best spade and hoe in the world cannot guarantee a good crop. They only make it more likely that growth will be unobstructed. The mystery of maturation lies in the heart of the seed, and the outcome of planting depends largely on the vagaries of weather. Still, tools are important in helping to ensure that planting seeds will bear fruit. Tools can remove stones and roots, aerate the soil, weed and water the garden. It would be nice if we could be transformed without expending energy on particular exercises. But the capacity to remember and abide in God's presence comes only through steady training. If we wish to see and name and love Christ in the flesh of daily existence, we will eventually need some kind of intentional practice of spiritual discipline. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to start to look at different disciplines, and I'm going to encourage you to be bold and be courageous and make a commitment and try to lean into these and try these. But I've got a couple of ideas that I want to help lay a foundation as we move toward that. And the first one is this: be adventuresome in trying new approaches. We're going to talk about some things that you've done before, but I may give you different ideas or different avenues that you've never done before. We may talk about some things that you've tried before and you said, that's not for me. And I'm going to encourage you to give it another shot. Some of the things that we talk about will be right in your wheelhouse, and some of them are definitely going to stretch you beyond your comfort zone. And my encouragement to you is just give it a shot. Give it a try. Make a commitment to experience it, to experiment with it just a little bit. You may think that you don't like green eggs and ham, but when you taste them, you do. You do. There's transformation there. And the second thing is this: be thoughtful and intentional. So this is going to require commitment on your part. It's going to require concerted effort on your part. It's going to require time and carving out time. It's going to require work and intentionality. So my encouragement is also to experiment with different times of the day and days of the week that work best for you. Think about locations that are more conducive and less conducive and try to work yourself into those, situations that work better than others. Put things on your calendar. Block out time. As we'll talk about in a few weeks, unplug from all the other stuff from time to time so that you can devote your heart and your mind to these matters. And the third one is this: be gracious toward those who grow in different ways and at different paces. We want to support one another, not judge one another. The goal of spiritual exercises and disciplines is not elitism. It is not measuring ourselves next to others. That's what the Pharisee in Luke 18 does. Proud of the prayers and the life that he offers, compared to the tax collector that won't even come near the temple. And yet Jesus says only one of them went away justified, forgiven, transformed by that experience. And it wasn't the one who judgingly looked down on others because he thought he was better. So this isn't about, do you pray more than someone else, or do you read more than someone else? This is not a competition. This is something that we collaborate on and we encourage one another in. So I don't want to make this about judging other people around us. Be gracious to those around you. But my last one is this: be gracious towards yourself. Don't beat yourself up if you struggle with certain disciplines. Don't beat yourself up if you commit to a practice and then you miss it for a day or a week or a month. This is the New Year's resolution syndrome, right? That we're all committed for the first day and the first week, and then we struggle. And sometimes the struggle leads to shame, and the shame leads to stopping. So my encouragement is, be gracious to yourself, because love transforms, but shame suffocates. Grace empowers, but guilt enslaves. As a friend of mine likes to say, when it comes to life in the Spirit, we are not in the ore-making business. We're in the sale-making business. Spiritual disciplines aren't ores. We don't muscle our way through transformation, through our own sweat and shame. They are sales. What we're doing is working hard to build habits that we lift up, hoist up in the air, so that it is the power of God's Spirit that moves us forward.